You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey, good morning. Nice to have you back on this Tuesday morning, August 19th, 2025, 7:06 the time here. And as I was looking to tell you what's coming up this hour, it occurs to me that poor Parker Olson, who produces this program down in Madison Studio A2, I don't know if you should believe me when I tell you what's coming up this hour, because I looked back at the plan for what I was going to talk about last hour.
Yeah.
And I accomplished almost none of that.
Yeah. New Coke wasn't on there.
I did not have New Coke on there. I did not have Derek Van Orden trying to sneak into Eau Claire last week and giving him an earful on that. We did not say much about Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley accepting tens of thousands of dollars in trips during her time on the bench. And we have not really gotten into the Trump-Zelensky meeting and him attacking mail-in voting, though we will get to that with Dan Schaefer in our 8 o'clock hour. So what I think we're going to be talking about this hour, unless, again, I need to give Parker Olson a history lesson and we have to throw the script out the window again, is we'll be talking to Dan Hagen from WJFW, Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander, and we'll be talking to former legislator Fred Clark, who now lives way up north and had quite an online column directed toward Wisconsin Republicans who were sending sternly worded messages to Canada that the wildfire smoke was such a bother to them. And Fred Clark's response was just great, and I asked him to come in at 7:30, and we'll talk more about that. But first, let's talk about the weather that we've got right now, and what's obstructing our view is not wildfire smoke this time. It's just good old-fashioned fog, because there's been a lot of rain, a lot of moisture out there, and Brittany Merlot is here to tell us more about that, and you know, hopefully the drier details of what lies ahead. Right, Brittany?
Yes, a much better forecast for you today.
Good.
Just besides that dense fog advisory up northwest until 9 o'clock today, Hayward, Rice Lake, Eau Claire, visibility is pretty bad for you. Otherwise, still very soggy out there. We got a good 4 to 8 inches of rainfall that fell in pockets from I-80 to I-88, where some of the heaviest storms hit yesterday with torrential rainfall. So a lot of basements do have some water in there. We are looking at some cropland flooding as well. The rivers are rising too. Fox River at New Munster, Kickapoo, the Trempealeau, and Black Earth Creek over by Madison. It has just hit record levels here this morning. So flooding on the rivers is still going on today. We're also looking at Lake Michigan, very rowdy. Beach hazard statement out there. 3 to 5 foot waves from Milwaukee into Racine and Kenosha. I would avoid the beaches there. Be careful. But we do have this high pressure system that settled in. The cold front has cleared the state. We've got more and more sunshine peeking out by this afternoon. Calmer winds. The only thing that could happen today is maybe a spotty sprinkle. And I think that'll stay more towards the north this morning. And then a chance kind of moves over towards Lake Michigan this evening as the winds start to shift off the lake. So a lake breeze expected later and a few spotty showers. But otherwise, highs today comfortable in the mid-70s to low 80s. Much crisper conditions moving in, that humidity leaving us alone. And we've got this high-pressure system here all week. Our next chances of rain, real rain rolling through, isn't until Friday. And behind that, it kind of feels like fall over the weekend.
Well, it's funny that you would say that, because that's exactly what Rob is saying from Tigerton. Looks like an autumn-type weather that is coming to wrap up the month of August. Good morning from Tigerton. Rob writes, it's cloudy and 61 degrees. Picked up 0.6 inch of rain yesterday. Work around the home and some paperwork for my mowing jobs. Today they're mowing jobs in Wittenberg. Let's see. He also said, as we talked a lot about New Coke last hour, he said,
so
I am strictly on a diet sun drop. Mountain Dew and Mellow Yellow is too sweet. So it's Diet Sun Drop for him. Not Mountain Dew, not Mellow Yellow. He's in Tigerton. Of course you love your Sun Drop.
You have to, yeah.
Yes, that's great. Let's see. And Brittany was right on the money with where the heavy rain set up. So
thanks, Rob.
There you go. So yeah. that was really nice. And let's see what else was in the mailbag. I asked people about, you know, to help educate Parker about New Coke, and
we're still on.
Well, because again, people responded. Yeah, Brittany, were you aware of the whole thing with New Coke back in the mid 1980s? Had you heard of it?
Is that when the recipe changed?
Yes.
Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's when the recipe changed.
I had heard.
See, she knew that's when the recipe changed. Anyway, from Jim in Brookfield on the text line, he writes, in the mid 80s, New Coke was launched, tasted just like Pepsi. I remember the Pepsi ads that said the other guy just blinked. Lori and Hayward, good morning, Pat. I remember when Coke changed its product, and at the time I was an avid Coke drinker. My sister was an avid Pepsi drinker. Well, a month or so later, we met each other, and she was drinking Coke and I was drinking Pepsi. Neither of us realized that we'd made the change as the original Coke disappeared. From Dave in New Berlin, I recall what happened was New Coke was later rebranded as Coke 2 when Coca-Cola Classic was launched. Yes, Parker, this gets even sillier. When Coke went back to the original formula, the New Coke, they branded it as Coke 2, like it's a movie sequel. and it was Coke 2 for years.
Coke,
yes.
What are you doing?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. And then this is why I love Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Come for the soda talk. Stay for the truth talking about Derek Van Orden. Okay. Well, see, we've got that. And Mathers, Luke Mathers, I don't fault Parker for not knowing about a pop culture reference that's old enough to be his father.
Pop culture.
Oh, pop culture. Oh, Brittany, you caught that.
Oh,
thank you.
All right.
There we go.
Luke's on it.
Thank you, Brittany. We'll talk to you next hour.
Sounds good.
As always, we invite you to join us at Up North News on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. You can subscribe to our newsletters. You can also check us out on social media. There's a lot going on there. As Sherita Booker, our social media manager, every week gives me a rundown of some of the more popular stories from the past week. Now, to nobody's surprise, the flash flooding in Milwaukee was far and away one of our most engaged posts on social media. But there were other things as well, like, well, George Webb. George Webb restaurants, 23 of them tomorrow in the Milwaukee area, are going to be giving away free burgers from 2 until 6 tomorrow afternoon. And I understand they've also given out all the free vouchers that they were going to be giving for people who want to get burgers later on. So that was a very popular post on Facebook. On Instagram, there's a story about Ryan Sternad, a beer vendor at Brewers Games, who has announced his candidacy for governor. And there was a popular post about the Milwaukee Bucks' Bobby Portis Jr., who's long been involved in the fight against hunger, and his work with Feeding America. And that includes leading the PB&J Challenge, which raised millions of sandwiches for kids, and funding something like 185,000 meals through the Bobby Portis Foundation. So again, that was one of our more popular posts. So you can read all of what we do all across social media. We are on Blue Sky now too, as well, if you're looking for an alternative to the dumpster fire, formerly known as Twitter, and of course, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. We're there. We're everywhere. So come follow Up North News along the way. So, yeah, as I was saying last hour, we're going to get into some of the other discussions about things that were in the news. And they included a story from Dan Bice in the Journal Sentinel about State Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley. And this is about the trips that are taken by politicians and elected officials like justices. And there's conferences that you can go to. There were conferences that I went to as a state legislator, but those things were pretty much official business, some things that were covered by the legislature, some things that you had to pay on your own if you wanted any extras to go along with it. That's a little different than, you know, liberal or conservative outside groups or think tanks paying for your travel. And according to the Dan Bice story, he writes that since being appointed to the court by former Governor Scott Walker, Rebecca Bradley has reported that several conservative groups or legal centers have picked up nearly $52,000 in lodging, meals, airfare, and other expenses so she could attend 20 out-of-state conferences and seminars since 2015. No other sitting justice reported receiving even a third of Bradley's travel expenses that were covered by outside groups. And yes, this does have Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito vibes, very much so, with trips to Alaska, Hawaii, Florida, Utah, Colorado, Puerto Rico, Laguna Beach, California, and more. So Rebecca Bradley issued a statement that defended the trips and criticized her potential opponent, Appeals Court Judge Chris Taylor, who announced her own candidacy several weeks back. Next highest on what Bice calls the judicial junket list is conservative Brian Hagedorn, who has accepted $14,000 in conference and event expenses since he joined the court in 2018. At the bottom of the list is Liberal Justice Jill Karofsky, who has reported zero event expenses picked up by outside groups since she was elected to the Supreme Court back in 2020. Now, Rebecca Bradley has still not made a formal announcement on whether she is running for another 10-year term on the state Supreme Court in April of next year. Now, I am not here to tell you that all of these trips are necessarily wrong. There's a reason why they have to be disclosed. And I think all of us understand, you know, whether it's the need for continuing education to go to a conference here and there, or maybe somebody actually, you know, wants you to speak at a conference because of your level of expertise on a particular subject. And then for every voter, for everybody for that matter, there's a line somewhere. There's a line at which, below which, you're saying, okay, well, this comes with the job. You go to conferences and things like that. And somewhere above that line is, this seems awfully gratuitous. And in the case of Rebecca Bradley, again, as a state Supreme Court justice, it all is supposed to be reported. So now it's out there, and now there's this newspaper article about it, and now people can decide for themselves whether that's an egregious amount of travel that you're letting political outside groups pick up when you're supposed to be, you know, a state Supreme Court justice who hears all cases fairly, even cases that might be brought by conservative legal groups. But it's all out there for the voters to decide if what Rebecca Bradley did was above board or not. At least it has to be reported, unlike the U.S. Supreme Court. And that's where all the controversy is right now with Clarence Thomas and Justice Alito and more accepting all kinds of luxury trips. And some of them were barely reported and some were not reported at all. But there really isn't a code of ethics or any kind of a disciplinary matter. You're certainly not responsible to the voters because it's a lifetime appointment. And so when it comes out, again, this is my age. I was raised, and much of human history prior to that, is that if it's been discovered that you have received this much luxury travel around the world as a U.S. Supreme Court justice, that's a scandal. And you normally feel a sense of shame and step down. But the day and age we live in now is you simply wait for attention to die down, for people to get distracted by some other story, and then you just go on as if nothing happened. And maybe that's how Clarence Thomas and Alito and the other justices have been able to get by so far. But it's no less a scandal. And there's no reason, like today's report, to remind us all that we have a court in Washington, D.C., that is fatally compromised and corrupt. A local update is next for some of you. Others will visit with Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
right, welcome back on this Tuesday. It's August 19th, and our friend Dan Hagen is here from Newswatch 12 WJFW TV. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I see the Patagonia jacket is back out. This is nice. Right. It's a lovely orange and black combination here that you've got us.
60 degrees here in Rhinelander, overcast skies. It kind of seems like fall is here, but I know.
We were having that discussion earlier about maybe we're getting this early taste of, the fall weather. And that's, when you've done 90s as long as we have, that's totally understandable. But I also wanted to get you
wanted
to get your thoughts on the comparison here of the Fred Flintstone. Is that folks watching on social media? Again, it's orange and black. In the picture here, the tie is purple, but usually it's kind of that light blue of what you got going there. I mean, you kind of see it, don't you?
Maybe the designer got inspired by this. I could see it. You know, people often say look like Scooby-Doo or Shaggy, rather. I don't know. But I'm a cartoon character, apparently.
You know what? There are worse things to be compared to. Trust me.
I have been told that I look like Shaggy when my hair is long. So maybe you and I could do like a Halloween outfit.
I could totally see that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huh.
Generic white man with brown hair.
Well, he's look. He
could if I let the scruff come out a little.
Yeah, okay.
We're seeing it now once he lets the hair down. Yep.
Yeah.
Fact of the matter is we're all characters in our own way. And especially here in the mornings where we get to let our hair down. We're not these ruggedly handsome news anchors like Dan has to be in the evening time here. So what kind of stories are you working on over there these days?
It takes a lot of work to be ruggedly handsome. My makeup artists,
your team. You got a team that you spend in the chair there, don't you?
So my team, spends a couple hours making me presentable. Mm-hmm. Pat, it's kind of interesting. I don't even wear makeup on TV. I don't know if I should be admitting that, but did you?
Yeah,
I've watched your clips.
I've watched your clips. I could give you a few pointers here. Yeah, it's okay. No, there is nothing like when there's a new male reporter. And like the first time that they're maybe filling in as a news anchor and they look back at the tape and you see the oily forehead or you see the little red patches on the cheeks. And there's nothing like when it's kind of like walking a kid to kindergarten on the first day of school, when we would walk the reporter next door to Walgreens and we'd head over to the CoverGirl section. He says, opening his desk drawer and pulling out our little powder puff here and trying to get the right shade. Let's see. My shade here is 535 medium light is what it is. It's a CoverGirl clean matte that gets put on every day. And when it was on TV, there'd also be like a little liquid foundation on the beard, to keep that at bay. And if you miss a day, if suddenly you're rushed, breaking news or something, people write in. They're like, what happened to you? You're very swarthy. Are you drunk? I'm like, no, I just forgot makeup that day.
That is funny. People always say I look better in person, which I don't know how to take that, but I think it's because of my lack of makeup. I should probably wear some on TV.
It, a little bit never hurts to get rid of the shine.
Yeah.
But again, we you and I have both seen plenty of people who overdo it. Who
That's right.
looked like, maybe a little adult. Less spackling, went into this. So,
well, I do want to share a cool story, Pat, if you'll allow
please.
Me. So up here in the Northwoods, we have this Northern Highland Fishery Research Area. It's in the Northern Highland American Legion State Forest, which is DNR operated. And this research area has been doing uninterrupted research since 1946. So it's been doing it's been looking into area lakes and doing fish production kind of studies. And they did this really cool study recently on Sanborn Lake. And all they tried to do was restore like natural decay in the lake. So pretty much all the lakes nowadays, they have humans all around them and people don't want leaves in their lake. They don't want down trees in their lake. But they put in more than 100 down trees into the Sanborn Lake. They let leaves go in as well. And it doubled. Well, I shouldn't say that. Correlation does not mean causation. But
yes.
It correlated with a doubling of fish production in the lake. And as we know, that's a huge issue nowadays. There's so much stocking going on. So some pretty promising research there with boosting fish populations.
See, now that's interesting. This whole, again, restoring thing. We talked about this with the Milwaukee flash floods last week about how they were turning, river channels into concrete channels, basically, because people didn't like the muck and the trees and the way it would flood. And so they essentially monkeyed around with Mother Nature and, to its detriment. And there's now this move to kind of get things back to a more natural state. So this is a very nice development up there.
Yeah, pretty cool. And the next thing that they're working on, they're going to try to mimic what Mother Nature was like before climate change. Ice out time. So the time when ice is off of a lake in the spring has varied a lot more because of climate change. So they're actually going to change the temperature of the water in a few lakes to see if it will help walleye production. Because a big theory is that, walleyes spawn in the spring, but with this varying ice out time, they get off cycle from like zooplankton and other food that small walleye would like to eat. So they're actually going to try to change the temperature in some of the lakes to see how that impacts walleye reproduction. So that could be fascinating as well.
It is fascinating because, again, we don't get to enjoy these things if a changing climate, continues to do a number on everything from, seasonal snowfall to whether you even get ice on some of these lakes or not with the warmer winters. So I'm really happy to see these things and glad that you're following it there up at WJFW. That's Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander, where Dan Hagen follows along and is also a good sport as we talk TV makeup tips. We
right.
cover it all and just 10 little minutes every week. So
I should cover more, but
No, you're beautiful. Don't ever shave. All right. Have a great day. And we'll be back with more live from Lake Wissota here on the Civic Media Radio Network right after this.
Welcome back to Mornings with Pat Craigwell, where we wonder if he'll unmute.
Yeah. There was supposed to be this doubleheader today at Wrigley Field between the Brewers and the Cubs. There was one game, the makeup game from an earlier rainout, and then the second game was rained out. But in the first game, Freddie Peralta, 6 innings of one-hit shutout ball. The Cubs only got 2 hits for the entire game. The Brewers coasted to a 7-0 win in the series opener. Home runs by Bryce Terang and Caleb Durbin. And then game two was rained out. So, once again, we're facing a day-night doubleheader at Wrigley Field because they've got to get in 5 games in 4 days. And so the first game, again, pregame at 12:45 this afternoon. And then game two, that pregame coverage, will begin at 6:30. And the weather is a lot nicer. They will almost definitely get in both games of that doubleheader, unless, of course, Chicago is, again, looking for a way out of it, as they seem to do sometimes with the weather. Let's talk about the weather and the climate and the changes up in Canada that have led to a summer of wildfire smoke that has affected us here in Wisconsin. Certainly, those wildfires have affected folks in Canada a lot more. They're hurting right now. These are forests that are way up north, not the kinds of things that are easily managed. And then, of course, there's a changing climate that Canada had much less to do with than, say, certain other industrial countries. But that didn't stop some politicians from complaining about it anyway. There was, for example, Congressman Tom Tiffany and other members of Congress who signed on to a sternly worded letter to Canada about the wildfire smoke and their helpful advice on what Canada could be doing differently. And Dan Hagen is sticking around with us from Newswatch 12, WJFW in Rhinelander. And Dan, the same could be said. There were state legislators that kind of wanted to play Me Too on this as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. Representative Calvin Callahan is a Republican from Tomahawk, and he sent a strongly worded letter. I think he put in a formal complaint as well. We've been dealing with that smoke for most of the summer, unfortunately.
Yeah, he wrote the letter to Lee Zeldin, the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, and the International Joint Commission, calling for an investigation into Canada's wildfire management practices. Well, it seems like we would all benefit from folks who maybe know a little bit more about the subject and could, you know, help our Canadian neighbors to better educate some of our legislators and lawmakers here. And Fred Clark is just that kind of a person, a former state legislator from the Baraboo area who now lives up in the Bayfield area. And I saw that on Substack, he has a column entitled "Our Smoky Summer, the Fine Art of Schooling Our Canadian Neighbors." And Fred, nice to have you back here again. Thanks for being here.
You bet. Morning, Pat.
You make clear in no uncertain terms what you thought of these kinds of, you know, sternly worded letters to Canada and what it is they're exposing about their lack of knowledge when it comes to, firefighting and to woodland management. How would you describe just the overall thesis of how you describe the opinions in these letters?
Well, I to begin with, it's insulting to suggest to our neighbor to the north, which is undergoing a natural disaster of really, this is the second year in the last 3 years that Canada's had just record-breaking number of fires. And we're complaining right now about smoke around our barbecues. And not to minimize the fact that smoke impacts are real, it affects the health of many people and it is inconvenient, but experience or imagine what the Canadians are experiencing right now. We have a long history of cooperation with Canada in firefighting and fire management. We share resources back and forth across the border all the time. Had Congressman Tiffany and his colleagues simply picked up the phone and had an hour-long phone call with Canadian Natural Resources ministers or the ambassador, they would have learned a lot and maybe would have written a very different letter if they'd been interested in it.
But instead, as you write, they instead relied on false social media posts that conflate the difference between human-caused fires with arson. And that's right. You know, they need to do a better job of patrolling these woods. And these woods, these are not what we typically think of as woods, or even what you'd think of in, say, Southern Canada. Northern Canada is a different beast altogether, right?
That's exactly right. What we're talking about here are the boreal forests of far northern Canada that grades into the subarctic region. These are sometimes called the taiga forests, small, sparse trees, very scattered on the landscape, very different than the forest that you and I and most Americans are used to. And the key point here is that these are large roadless areas that are essentially almost impossible to access except with float planes or boats in many cases. So they seem to have this idea that the, you know, logging equipment could just be driven all around Canada to thin these woods out. In fact, most of these areas are unmanageable for a variety of reasons. And believe me, the Canadians know how to do resource management. If you want to go to British Columbia and look at the mountainsides there, they know how to log in Canada. But these areas, a totally different game. It's about half of the United States is in this kind of condition that's essentially roadless and sparsely forested and very difficult to manage. And now they're undergoing a historic drought that is leading to these wildfire conditions. The ignition sources will always be there. And it's really climate change that is driving these extreme fires that are happening all over the world. This is not unique to Canada.
So, Fred, would you point out a different solution to Canada? It seems like they know as much as they know, and they're doing everything they can. But I know in these letters they're saying that Canada could be, more active. But you're saying it's impossible for them to even actively manage.
Well, most of these areas, yes. Congressman Tiffany seems to think that there'll be loggers and every community ready to just go thin these trees if we just let them. In fact, there's no industry. There's no forest products industry in that entire region of Canada of the scale that would be needed to even do forest management. And the reason there isn't is because the trees aren't there. So that's not a possibility. Any thinning or prescribed fire that could be done to reduce fire risk is all cash out the door, hugely expensive work. And we're talking again about an area about half the size of the United States. So Canada knows full well that this is a giant natural resource challenge for them. They have a all of society approach that they're trying to take. Much of these lands are indigenous lands that are in the control of First Nations in Canada. It's a hugely complex and expensive problem to solve. I think what U.S. members of Congress should be doing is trying to understand this issue better and offering to cooperate, which is what we've always done with Canada historically.
And we are seeing that cooperation in terms of, you know, there are firefighters from the U.S. who are going there. Folks in Canada are very grateful for that. Yeah. But we also have to be mindful that there are lessons to be learned here. And in my mind, lesson one would be not to gut the budget of the U.S. Forest Service, because what's happening there, you know, with a changing climate could just as easily, you know, be our problem in some future summer.
There's the irony, Pat. Yeah, just days before this letter was sent, these representatives voted for the big, beautiful bill that, among other things, that eliminated almost all of the subsidies for renewable energy that would have helped us reduce our climate emissions in the United States, which is a key driver to climate change around the world. And they supported the Elon Musk's monkey wrenching of federal agencies, including the U.S. Forest Service. Our lead wildfire control agency has lost more than 4,000 experienced firefighters in the last 6 months. In what world does that logically make sense to do that and then send a letter like they did?
We're talking to Fred Clark, former state legislator from the Baraboo area, who now is writing and living in the Bayfield area, and talking about wildfires up in Canada that have, by the way, this isn't just a bunch of trees up north that are burning. This has dislodged or displaced, I mean, how many people, like 40,000 Canadians have had to find new places. They've lost their homes or their communities, right?
That's right. Entire communities have been evacuated. And the only reason that number isn't larger is again, because most of these areas are very sparsely populated and mostly roadless. But entire communities have been displaced. It's been inconvenient for people in the United States. And at times, it's a health risk to have that wildfire smoke coming down here. But just imagine the impact on Canadians and what they're dealing with. Let's think about our obligation to our neighbors.
That's Fred Canadians Clark. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's Fred Clark. And I'm also joined by Dan Hagen from WJFW Newswatch 12 on this Tuesday morning here across the Civic Media Radio Network. And Dan, again, we have the wildfire smoke that's coming down from Canada. But much like 2023, when this was happening as well, with a massive wildfire season, I'm sure it has sparked, no pun intended, conversation in your part of the state about, again, making sure that the resources are there to fight wildfires as they break out, you know, in north central Wisconsin.
Yeah, and if you look at these letters sent by the legislators, climate change is not mentioned in them, right? And that's a big part of this problem, perhaps the biggest part. So I want to go back to Fred here. Fred, can you just draw a clear line for us between climate change and these fires? Because I know we've had droughts before, but what makes it different, in 2020s?
Yeah, well, what's driving the extremes is the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere that is contributing to these climactic and weather extremes. And in this case, it's contributing to the extended drought that has these forests just tinder dry. And all it takes is a spark in many cases to set off some of these blazes. But the research on this is clear, and there is lots of climate science work that basically teases out the impact of climate change toward driving these more extreme conditions. And the take-home message is, this isn't a one-off. This is what we can expect to see more of in the years ahead. And it's a global problem. This is not just a Canadian problem.
No, far, far from it. And the extremes, I mean, again, are self-evident. Look at the flash flooding in Milwaukee, where you've got this once in a thousand year rainfall. We get heavier rains, We get hotter, longer droughts. You get storms that explode now in growth. Look at Hurricane Erin right now. Went from a nothing, a tropical depression, to a Category 5 hurricane faster than any other storm. And this is this, Fred, is kind of our new normal, that these things are going to spread. And I'm not in any way suggesting that we're necessarily helpless about it, but I wanted to make sure that people understand that, you know, for the moment, this is kind of a new normal, and it doesn't make sense to just say to Canada, "Hey, could you keep the smoke down over there, please?" You know, because it's just not very feasible. We're talking to Fred Clark, former legislator, about the situation up in Canada. We've been joined by Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12, WJFW in Rhinelander. Dan, again, it's great to catch up with you. Thanks for sticking around so we could visit with Fred, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Dan. We will continue here with Fred. Some of you will have a local update as well. And then in our 8 o'clock hour, we will be talking to Dan Schaefer. He's the political editor for Civic Media and founder of the Recombobulation Area. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
So welcome back at 7:52 to what would be our Way Up North segment. But we started way up north way too early because we wanted to spend some extra time with Fred Clark, who is way up north now in the Bayfield area, but weren't always the case as a state legislator in the Baraboo area from 2009 to 2014. So, Fred, before we get back to Canadian wildfire talk and things like that, what's a nice young legislator from Baraboo doing way up north now?
Well, it's been a great place to relocate. I've always loved this part of Wisconsin. I like to sail, and it's a beautiful location here near the Apostle Islands. You honestly, it's one of the state's crown jewels of public lands, natural resources, land and water, and really enjoying life up here.
I can completely see why that is, and I can completely see why you and others were so bothered with this talk from politicians about smoke, when what they were getting at, and I didn't want to put words in your mouth too soon, but now that we've gone into this conversation a bit, I'm going to go ahead and put words into Tom Tiffany's mouth and in response say, you know, the answer to preventing fires is not to clear cut everything and pave it over. I know that some people would love to do that. I mean, there's not a piece of land that I don't think Congressman Tiffany wouldn't like to see strip mined at some point or paved over in the name of development. But that's really not how we like to practice things up here. And when we're talking about fire management, I know there's this focus on what they like to talk about in terms of management techniques. Mm-hmm. To me, that's just a sneaky way of saying, yeah, if you would just let, you know, more industry in, that would solve things. And I want to make clear, I'm not talking about let's just have old growth forests with no management. There's room for a balanced approach here.
Well, there is. And there are many parts of the Western United States, for example, where selective thinning can be an important tool in reducing fire risk. We know that. The science is there. But it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not a solution that works everywhere or even could be applied everywhere. And in northern Canada, again, these are very sparsely forested areas where there's trees and there's wetlands and there's shrubs. There's a ton of carbon stored in these lands, but most of it's below ground. So it's a totally different set of tools in the toolkit and not as many tools available to help manage this problem. And, you know, the irony here is that the president's budget, for example, well, not only have more than 5,000 people left the United States Forest Service in the last 6 months. Many of them were experienced wildfire people who now we've lost their expertise and their skill set. They also want to eliminate the research program in the U.S. Forest Service, which most people don't know about. You think about national forests, but the United States Forest Service Research Program is the largest natural resource research program in the world. and does important work on wildlife and climate change. And they want to eliminate that too. So we're just stumbling our way into this future with no resources, with no knowledge. And here we're going to go try to tell the Canadians how they ought to do it.
And by the way, it's not just that one. As you make note, by President Trump withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accords, yep, it also helps dismantle other climate programs and renewable energy initiatives, including all kinds of other research that was being done on climate science. And now, again, all of that wouldn't stop this year's fires, but that's right, it would certainly help find ways to stop making the problem worse, but also to mitigate the impacts that are going to be happening for the near future because of a changing climate.
Yeah, we need a long vision. We need science and research and just strategic thinking about this question more than ever. And at the very moment when we need these things the most, we're walking backwards. I've called this the J.D. Vance School of Diplomacy. Basically, screw everything up at home and then let's go tell our neighbors how they ought to do it better.
It is something that we've seen in many recent events, and some that we're going to be talking about in our next hour with Dan Schaefer as well from the recombobulation area. But yeah, Fred, I really appreciate you taking some time to talk to us about that. It's been great having you make this relocation up here, and you know, another time down the road, I want you to come back here and we're going to talk about 2026, some of the people that you're talking to up there and what the political landscape is going to look like, because I may be wrong, but I think there's still a little bit of a political animal in you as well, and I don't doubt that there's going to be conversations about how that's all going to go to make sure that there's good representation up in the Northwoods next year.
Well, thanks, Pat. We've been having a lot of conversations throughout northern Wisconsin, and what's really clear right now is that I think people are really primed to reevaluate what good representation means here in northern Wisconsin, and honestly what democracy means.
Oh, without a doubt. Fred, yep, Clark, great to visit with you. Thank you again so much. Have a great day.
Great. Thanks, Pat. You too. See you soon.
Thank you. Yep. So Fred is part of our Way Up North segment that we started a few weeks back. And it was actually Fred and a few other folks who reached out to me and said, hey, you need more voices from our part of the state, from, you know, Hayward and Ashland and Bayfield and Superior, places like that. And I said, great, come help me. And so we've had this wonderful cycle of voices. There was Jeff Renicky last week from the Friends of the Apostle Islands talking about the wave buoy system that is helping keep boaters safe up there as well. So we are always looking for your suggestions. And by the way, not just for Way Up North. It's kind of like Up North News itself, where people say, are you guys just do news up north? No. We're America's Up North. All of Wisconsin is America's Up North. And so we're looking for stories all over Wisconsin to do. So whether it's way up north or whether it's way down in places like Lake Geneva and Janesville, Beloit, which by the way, for the rest of the country, that's still up north. There's plenty of people that think of Lake Geneva. They're going there. Hey, we're going up north to Wisconsin. Wherever you'd like to see some stories done, have some ideas for guests or topics, we would love to have your suggestions. Get into the comment sections on Facebook or YouTube, or send us an email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. When we come back, we're going to be talking in our next hour to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area about Congressman Brian Stile. And is he sending signals that he'd like to help President Trump, who once again signaled that if it were up to him, he'd get rid of mail-in balloting? I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.